And we're on the phone with Dr. Tim Hall, superintendent of Sioux Area Schools. And Tim, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, well, thanks for being here. It's, you know, obviously we're into a time where I guess in a normal year you'd be getting ready for a couple days off and kind of headlong into the holidays, you know, with Christmas and Christmas music performances by the kids and celebrations, and all that's just kind of thrown out the window right now, and the way this year has been. But and all the kids right now are I guess at home studying. What's that whole situation like right now?
Well, first thing first, I think we can all agree that 2020 is the year that just keeps on giving. It certainly has been interesting.
Not in the way we want it to give, though.
No, you're certainly right on that, too. You know, it's just been bizarre for schools since the 11 o'clock at night announcement on March 12th that there was going to be a closure. And you know, we've talked before about the work that the teachers have done, which continues to amaze all of us.
Right.
And, you know, we have to give credit also to the families and particularly the students and particularly our younger students. You know, they've really, in most cases, done just remarkable transition. And when your whole educational experience and foundation is getting up, going to school, meeting with your teacher or teachers, depending on your grade level,
mm-hmm.
Your classmates, you have lunch, everything's very prescribed for you at that age. There's just, your day is pretty well set. And having gone now to virtual learning, our students have had to learn a whole new routine. And, you know, I know that there are some concerns for some kids out there because this isn't the best way for them to learn. But unfortunately, it's the way that we have to do it right now. So I give a lot of credit not only to our teachers for making this work, and we heard several comments last night about, you know, praising our teachers and the work they've done. But, boy, our students and families have just done remarkable work, too, because this is all new to them. Nobody, you know, none of these parents that, excuse me, none of these parents that are dealing with remote learning ever had that experience.
Right.
So excuse me. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Morning. Good morning again.
Good morning, yes.
So nobody ever really had that experience, and so it's all new for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
But, you know, the point of the board meeting last night was to consider a wide-ranging discussion, I should say. And the board was faced with really a tough decision, and boards all over the state are having to do that. You know, we've seen area schools have these same types of discussions, and then certainly statewide. But really the crux of the discussion was, what should we do about our K-8 students? With the district closure that we implemented a couple weeks ago now, we said students would come back on November 30th.
Right.
In the interim, then, of course, the Health and Human Services Department comes out and says, nope, high school kids are out until December 8th.
Right.
So then really the discussion last night was centered on what should we do with our K-8 students. And then, of course, because it was appropriate, and I'm glad they did it, you know, the discussion on the potential fallout from holiday gatherings, Thanksgiving, and then the extended Christmas break, you know, they did give consideration to possibly extending the closure all the way first semester.
Right.
And so I was really pleased with the discussion in that they considered lots of options. Finally, after some good discussion, they settled on bringing everybody back face-to-face on December 9th, which would coincide with the current Health and Human Services order. So sent an email out to families last night, and I think we've got it posted on our various social media pages, that the board has decided that the students will all stay virtual through December 8th and returning December 9th. Now, they also are going to meet again next Thursday, the 3rd. Number one, we have to affirm our extended continuity of learning plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's relatively perfunctory because we're not making significant changes to that. But, you know, we have to provide data. We're required to provide a certain amount of data. So that's Amy Cronemeyer's role. She'll work on that and present that information to the board next Thursday. But also at that same meeting, they're going to review the same data that we considered last night, same type of information, and then possibly, and I want to emphasize the word possibly, make a decision on whether or not to extend any type of closure there might be.
Right. Well, it's got to be tough and everything because, you know, this herky jerk back and forth between, you know, going to school and going home and learning from home and then back and forth. That can't be easy for the teachers and for the kids.
Well, teachers, kids, and parents.
Because, right. You know, oh, and parents. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got parents who are, you know, they're employees, and I've spoken at our Rotary Club and recognized that our businesses in town need their employees. Our employers are trying to run a business, and they're trying to do it in a pandemic. So know that it's important. I don't think there's anyone who would disagree that face-to-face learning, bringing the kids back to school, is the best option for their education. However, we always have to balance things through the lens of safety. And with the steady increase, some would say exploding increase in cases in our county, you know, the discussion was, and I think rightfully so, is it safe at this point to bring kids back? And, you know, good discussion last night. The schools haven't been really determined as a spreader area of the virus. At one point, just right around hunting season, we had over 200 students quarantined, and that number's now dropped quite a bit, mm-hmm. although our cases continue to go up. Several cases involving staff and students over the last few days. And when I talk with Karen Senkis at the health department, John at the hospital, they both community spread. So there isn't really a general one area, oh my goodness, it's Washington School or it's the high school. It's the community. So the virus is here and it's just being transmitted. So we, as I said, they considered a whole lot of options. We just have to deal with this for now. It is as troublesome as it is. It's kind of the way it has to be for now.
So you had, like I said, and we're talking to Dr. Tim Hall, superintendent of Sioux Area Schools. Tim, you had, when you made the decision and the school made the decision a few weeks ago before the governor decided to close schools, the high schools through December 8th, the teachers all had a plan to come back after Thanksgiving on the 30th. How hard is it going to be for them to now add that extra week into the plan? Is it something that they can just do, or is that going to be like, oh my gosh, now I got to do another week of this I wasn't planning for?
No, they're ready for it. This is what they've been doing all, you know, we spent the first part of the school in the classrooms actually preparing kids for this possibility. So at the same time where the teachers were preparing the children, certainly they were preparing themselves for this possibility. And so I don't think there'll be an issue for the teachers to extend. The bouncing back and forth would be a problem. I mean, at some point, you know, there'll need to be a decision. If we're going to come back, we're going to come back. And if we have to close again, we would do that. But the back and forth is tough for everybody.
Sure.
Teachers are good to go for right now. I don't want to say the new routine, but for now it's the new routine. And, you know, they've been doing, as I said, a good job here. And we'll continue to do so.
So ideally, Tim, kids come back to school on December 9th. They're in school then through what, the 23rd, and then off until the 4th.
Yes, that's the current plan. So we'll fingers crossed that will happen. You know, and I started to talk about the exploding number. You know, when I again talking with Karen and David, you learn because sometimes you just get lost in it. November 3rd to November 23rd, there was about a 300% increase in cases in the county.
Yeah.
And we know it's here, and, you know, the hospital is pretty much at capacity. In fact, I know of a staff member, one of our own staff members, who has a spouse who was unable to be treated in the hospital here and was sent to the area and has to be on a ventilator now. So it's not just the fact that, you know, there are cases in town. It's hospital service the COVID patients. And I understand from David that they've created a whole, basically a second floor to tend to the COVID patients, but other folks who have other issues, heart attacks or other emergency needs, that the staff would be stretched too thin to cover. So hospitality was absolutely one of the factors that we considered, along with the positivity rate. And again, from David John talking with him yesterday, the day before that, they had 65 positive tests out of 325 at the hospital. So that's right. a 20% positivity rate, and that's frightening no matter who you are. So in general, the county is about 5% positivity rate, which is still pretty high according to the health department. So just so many factors to consider. And as I said, I thought the board did a good job of working their way through discussion forth, and we're out until December 9th.
We're having a little bit of trouble there with your cell phone, Tim. It kind of stinks, but the whole situation there at the hospital is scary. You know, we've talked to we're on like once a month with Dave. Then we went to every other week, and now it's gotten to a situation now we're having him on every week because you know it's such a changing situation there at the hospital. But you know, with the increase in patients in the ICU and that, like you said, that COVID wing that they've kind of created there at the hospital, and stretching all the other resources out, you know, so thin that, like you said, heart attack victims, other people that come into the hospital, you know, might not be able to get treated that have nothing to do with COVID.
Yeah, and I know he's very concerned about that. He gave me an example yesterday. He knew that there were two COVID patients being released, but at the same time, there were four people in the ER.
Right.
With symptoms. And then later in the afternoon, another discussion I had, there were seven people in the ER with COVID symptoms. So, you know, like I said, it's here, and everybody's had to deal with it. I know in our area, neighbors, many, Brimley, Pickford, St. Ignace, all have gone to Rudyard, have all extended their closures through the 8th as well, and are going to review things before they come back, as our board will. I know Newberry, for example, is closed all the way through the Christmas break,
right,
to virtual training. So, again, just based on all the data that we had, it made sense that we extend this closure. And I also am appreciative of the board to agree to meet next week to review everything before we have the kids come back, and just kind of take a look at the trend lines. And we know that these cases can spike overnight. The stats change literally hour to hour. You know, I send out a release. We're required to send out a COVID notification whenever we have a positive case affecting either a student or a staff. And those letters go out to our families and staff through our school email. And of course, they're going to be posted on our website. And then 3 hours later, I'll get a notice that we have two more.
Right.
And so there was at least one day when I had to send out two notices because they were just coming in so quickly. So, you know, we're closely monitoring it. We talk with, both a lot of people at the health department now have given me their cell phone numbers. I've got David John's, and we're talking back. Area superintendents are talking back and forth. And, you know, we've been saying all along, this is new to all of us. Ever since last March, this has been new to all of us. And we'll just continue to have regular, or we'll continue to monitor these things day to day, and then have board meetings as needed, and make a decision on whether or not that we feel it's safe to come back to school. And you know, fingers crossed that we don't adapt Thanksgiving, and that we don't get maybe a bigger or a different surge after the Christmas and New Year's break. We're very concerned about that here. You know, we talk all the time about the student safety, and appropriately so. That's our function here, but we also have 225 staff people here, and
sure,
they've got families, and so that's a concern. And I was pleased to hear last night several people very concerned that, you know, not only are we worried about student safety, which of course is paramount, but we've also got a responsibility to be concerned for staff. And again, I was pleased with the board meeting last night, and pleased that they agreed to have another meeting next week so we can continue this dialogue, continue to review the data, continue to analyze whether or not it's safe to bring kids back, and then make the best informed decision that we can at that time.
We're talking to Dr. Tim Hall, superintendent of Souria Schools. Tim, I know obviously you just said that the paramount to keep the kids safe and everything, but you've also said several times, you know, today and other times that the ideal situation for student learning is face-to-face learning. How concerned are you for the long-term effects of what this is going to be for these kids' educations at both the elementary level and at the middle school and high school? I mean, how far do you think these kids might, you know, in their educational lives be behind once we get through all this and life gets back to quote-unquote normal?
You know, that really is the 64,000 that we're all struggling with, is that we, our number one, our kids are resilient. And they're able to adapt to a lot of changes. And I have a first grade grandson, and he's had to do his remote learning in the room next to where I was working from home, and I could hear the interaction. I think it was the second week of the closure. I stopped into a few classrooms and said hi to the students that I could, the elementary kids that I could see on their computers. And, you know, it's new to them. They're, as I said, they're very resilient. They're very quick to catch on. Our first grade grandson, little help in logging in and going right to the right spot on his Chromebook. And you know, we just have to remind him on when he's supposed to be online.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously that's a concern. And again, these kids, this is new. This whole learning, it's a whole new routine, a whole new structure. You know, it'd be like similar to, you know, taking someone, you know, every square inch of your facility, and you're going to drop you into a whole and tell you to run a major program. And yeah, a lot of the things are the same, but a lot of them are different, and, mm-hmm. and it takes a while to adjust and adapt. So I think I would characterize it as strongly concerned that an extended closure could have some issues for some of our students. But again, we have to give teachers a lot of credit, and the students, and of course their parents, trying to make the best of what we all hope is a temporary situation. But I think the longer that the masses are out now, virtual learning for some students is second nature. They are thriving, but we also know there are students who are struggling. You know, the ironic twist to that is that we have students who struggle with face-to-face learning, whether it's the actual learning or the social component, whatever. So there is fits all. I think just in general agreement, the vast majority of folks would say that in school, face-to-face learning with the teacher or teachers, best. And we're going to do that. And, you know, we use our NWEA MAP assessments, and that gives us pretty quick feedback in terms of what we're and allows teachers to then adjust instruction literally on the fly. They can see what happened on a Tuesday and then assess overnight, because we all know their day doesn't end when the school bell rings, and then actually adjust their lessons, their instruction, beginning the next day. So we will continue to do that, and we'll continue to monitor that and make adjustments. Will there be some something similar to summer slide? Yeah, I'm afraid there might be if this has to extend too long. Certainly, we want them back some point. As I said, we're going to be we'll be monitoring very closely the numbers as they come up after Thanksgiving and then after the long Christmas New Year's break. And you know, won't be afraid, won't be afraid to go back to the board and recommend another closure if we are that concerned at that time. But again, the intention here is to get them back here on the 9th. And then, you know, once again, I'll make a plea to the public. And there are guidelines. There are recommendations, health departments, from our medical professionals about the risks associated with coming together for holidays and other social gatherings, whether that's Halloween parties or hockey tournaments or you name it, whatever the activity might be. There is a certain level of risk. And I think, as I said, the vast majority of our parents, our teachers, and our students all want regular face-to-face instruction. So we're just asking, again, that everybody do what they can at their own homes and businesses to keep people safe, follow the directives are laid out by our health officials. And through those combined efforts, we're hopeful that we can bring kids back. And what I want to be very clear on is that certainly no one in the district and is telling people how to live their life. Our goal here is to get kids back in school and provide them with both the education and the structure in the safe environment that they need. So we're hopeful that people cooperate and will follow through on those guidelines with the intent of keeping these numbers down. We know, as I said, both David and Karen have said, this is community spread now. So it's here, it's moving, it's coming in quickly. We were one of the last places in the state to get it. We were kind of in that sweet spot for a long time.
Right.
And there's an interesting map I saw on Facebook. It was the spread, a kind of a live-action spread. And you can actually watch it marching across the UP and coming up from the Lower Peninsula and then all converging here. So it's here now, and as I said, certainly not telling people how to live their lives. Would never presume to do that, would never assume to do that. But we're asking to keep as safe as they can so that we can mitigate some of these numbers or reduce these numbers and then get our kids back in school.
Yeah, I think everybody kind of feels the way. And again, I've been preaching about it, and again, I know people are going to do what they're going to do, but you know, you got to be careful. It's scary. It's scary the way all of a sudden it's ramped up here. Like you said, we had this nice little, you know, kind of nice little area where we were kind of felt safe and everything, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's here, and it's ripping through the town right now.
Yeah, and again, that's pretty scary for us. And, you know, we're seeing now, and I just announced this week, our first case at Washington School, and that's a matter of public record. It's on our website. We never identify students or staff, but we've had a case now at Washington School, and that's our littlest, youngest learners.
Right.
So what we're learning here is that this disease doesn't care about your age. Obviously, it struck the older people first and those with other issues, and now it seems like it's moving on and getting a lot more people. So we're just hopeful that that this thing levels off and the positivity rates improve, hospital capacity improves, and that we can get our kids back.
Tim, I wanted to ask you, too, this would be the time, you know, when, like, I don't know if it would be juniors or seniors or whatever, be taking, like, SATs and things like that. Are those tests still taking place, or they've kind of said, well, we're not going to look at those for, like, college entrance or things like that?
No, all the testing for those types of things has still gone on. We actually held a test here on site before the closure, and I think that was October. I'm just my best guess. And we are still required to conduct our benchmark assessments, which I said are the NWEA/MAP testing that we give.
Right.
And then we're waiting to hear. I know there's some discussion in Lansing on what is going to happen with the MSTEP this year. And that's a much broader discussion because the federal government requires a summative assessment from each state. So if there is a waiver on the, that would actually, in my understanding of it, would have to come down from the feds.
Right.
And I know that Dr. Rice, the state superintendent, he's made himself pretty available to regions. We've had two or three regional discussions with him, and he's doing that around the state. He is sympathetic to that and understands that, you know, this in and out of school and then possibility of a remote assessment is problematic. Certainly, you know, those tests, they're very secure tests. And a remote virtual option caused some concerns from that aspect. So we'll see where it goes. I know that, you know, we also have to conduct teacher evaluations, and some of that is a good percentage of that is based on data. I know that there's discussion in Lansing on not including student growth data this year because, again, students are in and out of school, and it's hard to assign some of those percentages of growth, particularly if we don't do a summative assessment at the end of the year. So just a lot of things at play, really all the way up to the federal government.
It's just crazy. Who would have thought, you know, like when we started talking at the beginning of the year, you know, we always have these conversations once a month, you know, a couple times a month or whatever, different people and stuff from the school. And it's like, man, this year has just, I mean, could you even have imagined a year like this?
No, this is something that none of us are prepared for. I can tell you I've had a whole lot of post-high school education, and I have taken a lot of classes mm-hmm. from several different universities and lots of different professors, and I don't know that the word pandemic was ever mentioned in any single one. So
you had no pandemic 101 or something like that?
No, there certainly isn't. And again,
you had this year, though.
Yeah, we're all getting our master's degrees in it this year, but and that's been the issue, is that, as we've said all along, none of us have ever lived through something like this before, and that's affected us the way that this has. So school boards, school administrators, teachers, students, parents, the whole community are having to kind of work their way through this as best they can, and you know, sometimes there's agreement on the steps to take, and other times there isn't, and you just have to work through those and try to find some sort of compromise or a workable resolution to allow things to continue to go forward. So I think I sent an email out to our staff a while ago now, and I included the line from John Lennon that said, "Strange days indeed."
Yeah,
and that holds true that now as it did earlier in the year. So it's frustrating for everyone. It is forcing us, and I think, as I said all along, there will be a couple of benefits that come out of this. They're hard to see now, but they will come out. The first is that we will know that if we are ever pushed to this level again, that we can do it. It's not without its flaws, and certainly isn't the ideal for every student. But if we push comes to shove, and we have something like this that happens, you know, and certainly we're not for this, but we know now that we can do it. We promised last spring to our families and our students that we would do better if faced with this type of a situation again, and we've delivered on that. Mm-hmm. And I think that going forward, if we have to have this happen again in another year or another 2 years, we'll be better prepared and do a better job than we are now. So we are learning a different way to educate our kids. So, and that creates a little more flexibility. And that old statement about necessity is the mother of invention is certainly, you know, true here. Had to figure this out. Districts around the state and the nation have had to figure this out, and with varying degrees of success. So we're better prepared now than we were if we have to deal with something like this again. The other thing that I think that is important, and I've this in the past too, is that we've seen where our state and our businesses, private enterprise, need to come together to figure out a way to increase availability of internet, particularly in our rural area.
Sure.
And we're one of those areas. We've got kids that right now don't have internet at their homes. The issue isn't just that they don't have internet. We've got several families in our region, and I know the area superintendents have them as well, that don't have cell phone coverage. So even if we were to provide them with some sort of hotspot, there are different names for them now, but the general term is hotspot.
Yep.
If they don't have anything to connect to, that hotspot is just another piece of equipment in their house.
Right.
So at this point, I know that area superintendents supported a motion, and I know that we're in process. There are dollars available through the ISDs, and we have ordered. I know Jason Kronemeyer at the ISD has ordered in the hundreds, I think 200, 300, maybe 400 of these units that we're going to best to deploy going forward. And, you know, it's kind of an announcement, but kind of not, because all the details aren't worked out. But we're going to do our level best to help those families who are generally, you know, we need to take a look at two areas. Those families that are who struggle, maybe, and part of the criteria would be free and reduced lunch families. And then try to provide some sort of help in those areas where it's remote and difficult to get any service. And so that's being worked on behind the scenes. It dovetails again with my comment on the state and private business. I think there's some partnership opportunities there that they can get some more of this fiber in, get some more access to kids and families and businesses who are in remote areas, and increase our broadband and access for students. So hopefully that'll come out of it. I know Jason is from that, expecting a delivery of those, some of those units, probably as early as Monday. And we're working with the regional superintendents on a way to deploy those so that they can be used by families. And this would be a unit that would go into their homes. I just want to caution folks, there isn't a final system yet on how this is going to work.
Right.
Again, we're learning this as we go. But, you know, there was money through a grant that the ISDs were given. Jason very aggressively, and we're thankful that he did that, went after that money and got some. And now we're able to consider how best to provide some of these services.
Well, I know that when we've talked to Congressman Bergman, Jack Bergman, you know, we talked to him a few months ago, and then that was one of the things that he brought up, was the fact that this is identified a glaring hole, especially in our district, in our area, of not having that rural broadband and everything. And so obviously it just gets worse and exacerbated when you've got to send the kids, you know, back, you know, to school and everything. And like you said, you kids that don't have internet, it's a problem. And so hopefully that's something that can be worked out and taken care of.
Well, we talked, superintendents had a meeting, I'm trying to remember now, probably late spring, right near the end of the school year, and Senate Majority Leader Shirky was on the call. He expressed that same sentiment to him, that this is an area that the state legislature can help with, and he committed to doing that. And then then the election took over, and I think, you know, when it becomes election season, legislators, senators, and representatives are focused on the election.
Sure.
And of course, this year's election was unique in American history, so it drew a lot of energy, time, and attention. And so I don't know that they've really ever gone back and had much discussion on this. Now, I'm not saying they haven't. I'm just not aware of any.
Right.
But I do know that there were some dollars available, and got them, and we're going to do what we can to deploy those where it's most. And you know, it's not that we're going to be able to provide the internet to everybody. That's here. We're trying to shore up areas where there are deficiencies. And you know, we still have several hotspots out on in the district, throughout the district. You know, Dafter Island, the church out in Barbo on 15 Mile, Sugar Island, I think, has two up and running, and they're looking at the possibility of a third. The south end of the island is another area that's underserved. Big Bear Arena has one. All the schools, if a student for whatever reason needs to come to any of the buildings, can hide and do their work. And is it ideal? No, it's absolutely. But again, our focus isn't to provide service to every the school's function, but we are going to do what we can to support those families who are in need, whether it's from resources standpoint, or from the standpoint that there just is very limited access there. And again, we won't be able to solve everybody's issue. We know that we'll be able to try to help some. Now, having said that, we do know that in general, we're at less than 8 to 10% of the internet. So we have relatively good access for our students. But when you're a student that doesn't have it, that becomes a major issue, especially in a virtual learning environment.
Right.
So although there's pretty good coverage, there are still pockets of underserved kids, and those are the groups, those are the students and the families that we're hoping to help out.
We're talking to Dr. Tim Hall here on WSOO Sault Ste. Marie. Tim, what about, I know that when you, again, closed down the schools for prior to the governor's announcement till November 30th, that food service was going to be available in some way to those students. Now you're going to be adding an extra week or so onto that. Will that still be the case?
Yes. Our food service folks, our cooks, our food servers, and then we've reassigned our bus drivers to help out with that process. They're serving, I think the first week was a little over 400 meals or food for 400 students. We have some families who are really struggling, and And throughout the course of the school year, we send backpacks home mm-hmm. for those kids every weekend. And we have great support from businesses, churches, and individuals and other organizations to help us provide those weekend needed items. Most of it's food. Some of them are personal hygiene items, toothbrushes, mm-hmm. and those types of things. And those backpacks are given out on Fridays. The kids just know they come down, they grab their backpack, and off they go. There's no embarrassment. There's no identification. We know who they are. They grab the backpack, and to anybody else, it's just a kid walking along with a backpack. But to that family, it's important food. So we know that we have some families who struggle with transportation issues. And it was yesterday that the first time that we did this, that we actually sent buses out with those backpacks to families. And we'll continue to do that in addition to having our regular pickup at... Now, yesterday, this week's pickup was yesterday because of Thanksgiving, and that we'll have it again on Wednesdays, on Wednesday. So that'll continue. We'll do our best to provide the extra help for those families that need it in terms of delivering those backpacks. And then the rest of our families will continue to drive through the high school. I think it's Wednesday at 4 o'clock. And it runs until four. But we'll continue to do that. That is a part of the whole meal delivery process, which, the Fed approved, again, Michigan's request for a waiver, and meals are free for kids this year. So we're certainly encouraging families to take advantage of that. Contact Jordan DeRocher at our food service department. That information is on our webpage. If families need to sign up for that service, and we're more than glad to add them to the list. They have done a fantastic job in terms of organizing the process. Of course, we had a lot of practice last spring,
right?
So they too have improved their process, and it goes really quickly. And there's there's no issues. You pull up, you tell how many kids you have, and then those are the meals that you're provided. So we'll continue to do that during the closure, and an area that we really weren't well versed in last spring, but we've certainly tweaked it now to where it's a pretty smooth running operation at the high school.
Anything the community can do to help out with those backpacks that you sent out to those families?
Yeah, that's a great question. I appreciate it. Anytime that someone wants to provide some help there, the easiest way would be to make a donation, and then a cash donation that can come to this office. And we'll have the folks go out and make those purchases. Storage can sometimes be an issue, and people are so generous that we'll get boxes after boxes of things dropped off. And my goodness, we just can't say thank you enough to that. But in some ways, it does help just to have a cash donation, and then our people that work with those backpacks at the building level can kind of make some purchases that they need. But certainly, we'll take anything that is appropriate that we can send home to families on the weekends. And I don't have the number off the top of my head for that in terms of the number of backpacks. It's less than 100, but it's certainly more than 50. So it adds up in a hurry, and it's important food. Honestly, just cut it down to the basic level. It's food for families that might struggle with that on the weekends.
And they could just drop a donation off there to the administration building.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. Again, we'd be so appreciative, and a cash donation would be great. Some people sometimes are more inclined to drop off, the actual food. We'll certainly take those. We would never say no to that at all. But the flexibility to allow us to maybe buy a different type of food stored on that given week or that for that particular distribution would be helpful. That just gives us a little more flexibility into making sure that we're sending out well-balanced meals in quantities that are appropriate for our kids.
Could people write a check for that, or is you just...
They can make that check out to Sioux Area Schools and get it here to the administration building. And as I said, we'll manage the money here and make sure it gets put in the appropriate accounts and allow our staff members. And I should note, though, that our staff members are... A lot of this is extra. They'll go out to the stores, and when they have a donation, they'll take their own personal time and go out and buy these items. And these are add-on items to their regular duties. This backpack distribution happens whether we're in school or not. And people have just said our kids have a need, and they've stepped up that need. So we've got a lot of, that happens a lot in our district. And I know in other districts too, but, you know, I'm particularly fond of this one.
Right.
And proud of the efforts that we do. This is generally a task that people have taken on, and secretaries and counselors and Native American advisors and others in the buildings that have just said, you know, we have kids in need. I will take my own personal time, and I'll go to a local store and buy these items, and I'll bring them back. And oftentimes I know they're in there, you know, late on a Thursday night, or finding time on Friday to make sure that these backpacks are ready to go for kids. So that, you know, we're certainly appreciative of them, and the fact that, you know, this isn't the paid part of their job. They're doing this because kids are in need.
Well, and that's, you know, that's the thing too. I think that's one of the things that kind of falls between the cracks. You know, when you got something like this, there's so much, you know, overarching thing about COVID and all this other stuff that I think sometimes people tend to forget about these families that are, I mean, this is devastating for a lot of these families. Just, I mean, families that struggle under normal conditions are really having a tough time this year.
Yeah, and that's a great way to put it. They do struggle under normal conditions, and this is anything but normal.
Right.
And, you know, one of this before, I the generosity of our community never ceases to amaze me. And when there is a need and people are aware, they step up. So there can't be disagreements about virtual learning or coming back to school or politics or road millages or you, whatever the topic might be, there can be disagreement. Our community has a way of looking past those issues when it comes down to helping those in need. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one of the great things about living in Sioux is that, yeah, we can have disagreements, but at the end of the day, we're going to pull together. We're going to help those families and those students who definitely have a need. So, you know, that's, again, one of the things that makes me proud to be the district superintendent is that we have staff that do that on a routine basis, both teachers and non-teacher staff that just step up and do these things, but also just as a resident of a community that cares and will step up and help out kids in need when necessary. And that's just one of the more phenomenal things about our community.
Absolutely. Tim, anything else you want to add before we let you go?
Just a final comment about, you know, the board meeting last night. I want to thank all the parents who logged in and shared their comments and concerns. And we know, you know, I know our board struggled with the decision and great discussion. The job of a school board member is thankless in the best of times. And, you know, having to make these difficult decisions, it's personally stressful for them as well. They've got either their own children or family members who have kids in the school, and some of them have their own children in the school. So it's a very personal decision for them as well. But again, I want to thank everybody for logging in and providing the input. And certainly not everybody was happy with the decision. At the end of the day, the board, I thought, did a great job of listening, of absorbing, considering, and contemplating. And ultimately, the process ended with to keep everybody out until December 8th. And then, then they would come back the 9th. But then also to have a review meeting next week. And this is tough work for board members and administrators and teachers and students and parents and communities. It's just tough. So, you know, I appreciate everybody's input. I appreciate the fact that not everybody will agree with the decision the board makes. But again, they're the school board, and they are the voice of the community, and you know, they did a great job again last night. And they certainly ran the gamut from bring them back now to keep them out all the way through the end of the first semester. So the board had to sift through all of that and then make the decision that they felt was best, and they did that, and as I said, agreed to meet next week again to review that, and then we'll probably continue that process. I'll discuss that with the board going forward, that we're going to have probably some more regular meetings during this time frame up to and beyond the holidays, just so that we can continually present them with the information and the statistics and positivity rates and all those new phrases that we've learned about because of COVID. So, again, I think the process worked, and At the end of the day, I think student safety was the primary concern, along with staff safety. And just as of right now, the majority of the board, and I concur with them on this, that right now it's just not as safe as it should be for kids and staff to come back to school. So, you know, fingers crossed again that these numbers hold, don't get worse. I don't want to say hold, but don't get worse and actually reduce, so that when they review the data again on the 3rd, that we are able to actually come back on the 9th, because we will continue to monitor this and in the hopes that things improve and we can get our kids back.
Well, Tim, I know sometimes it's a thankless job, and it's tough decisions that like I say, you and the board have to make. But I mean, that's why you're in the chair, and you get the big shoulders to take the brunt when you have to, right?
Well, it goes along with the job. You don't sign up to be an administrator or a board. Fact that every day is going to be smooth sailing. That's just the nature of the beast. But again, as long as we can keep people focused on providing the best education we can in the safest environment that we can, I think the right decisions will be made. Now, it doesn't mean there won't be disagreement about safety and environments and all those other things, but my focus is always best education that we can, safest environment that we can, and continue to keep that at the forefront, I think will serve the best interests of our kids.
Absolutely. Well, Tim, have a happy Thanksgiving. I don't know how your celebration is going to be tomorrow. I'm sure it'll be smaller like everybody else's, but enjoy, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Mark, and happy Thanksgiving to you, and thanks again for having me on.
Absolutely, anytime. Dr. Tim Hall, Superintendent of Sioux Area Schools, joining us here on 1230 WSOO.